Most of us up here in the North Country think we know something about cabins, but our first guest knows a lot. Dale Mulfinger is an architect with the Sala Architects in Minneapolis, a firm which he co-founded in 1983. He has written five books, including his best-selling The Cabin, most recently a sequel, Back to the Cabin, More Inspiration for the Classic American Getaway. He has authored over 100 articles in regional and national magazines, and his sustaining research on cabins has earned him the title Cabinologist. He's designed quite a few cabins up here in Cook County as well, and he's in town now as a presenter at the 11th annual Lundy Vacation Home Tour tomorrow, Saturday 11th. Dale Mulfinger, welcome to the Roadhouse.
It's great to be here, and it's great to be in Grand Marais again.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Now, let's start with the real basics. How do you define a cabin?
Oh, that's a difficult one. But I like to think of it as a place where you know the coffee's brewing in the morning because you can hear it percolating about 10 feet away from your head.
All right. Well, that gives us a pretty good idea. That's a small house then, isn't it?
It's a small place. It's usually a bit rustic in character. It's, small enough so that you really don't have a lot to take care of. You're really not too worried about privacy in a cabin. So you're really having a very open space that if you have guests, you know, they expect to hear you snoring at night or whatever. So, yeah, a cabin is one of those great intimate environments where you really appreciate the people that you're going to experience it with.
Now, that's exactly the way I remember cabins, but it seems to me they've changed a bit over the years. What are your observations about changes since you designed your first cabin?
My first cabin was 14 by 18 feet, so that's a pretty small one. But certainly today, due to all kinds of factors, there's quite a shift going on, has been going on for 20 years, in the nature of what's being built out in rural America, or you might say cabin land. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which is land is expensive. People are going to these places now thinking of retirement. We have a large population who are looking to, as they get older, to possibly live at the lake or live in the woods. And therefore, their expectations of what they're building there is very different than just a weekend cabin.
How has that affected your practice?
Well, we have a lot of clients who want their retirement home to be designed in a very particular way. They may have a piece of land that's not easy to do a standard solution for. So they come to us because we know how to deal with unique conditions.
You know, here in Minnesota, we think of a cabin as being on a lake or a river or a body of water of some sort or another. But that's not necessarily true elsewhere.
That's right. Out in the Rockies, you would think of it being, you know, on the side of a mountain with a great view. And out in New England, it might be just in the forest, and it probably wouldn't be called a cabin. It would be called a camp. Mm-hmm. So that name camp shows up pretty much from the Adirondacks on east until you hit the Atlantic shore, and then it's called a cottage.
I think we notice going across the border here, they call them camps up in Canada.
Right. I think, you know, I'm not sure if that has some kind of a French or early English.
Could be.
The word camp also shows up down in Louisiana as well.
Really?
But otherwise, if you're in most of the rest of the South, it's fairly commonly called a cabin. If you're in the mountains, you know, down at the bottom of the Appalachians or in a lot of the man-made lakes that occur in Texas and other places.
Well, as you point out, because of land values, and particularly, let's say, on Lake Superior, people are building structures that have value commensurate with the value of the land. But inland, off the lakes, there are still lots of little cabins.
That's right. And we've designed a few of those. Did one recently just up in the Ely area, which was, if I remember right, 14 feet by 27 feet, little timber frame with a couple of lofts at either end, and built for maybe $90,000. Mm-hmm. And really a pretty charming little place, which a family of five gets to regularly and can stay in it for, you know, weeks on end.
I would guess you get a special pleasure out of designing something like that.
I do. You know, there's just a special feeling, and in fact, a special challenge when people come to you and say, I've only got, you know, under $100,000 to build with. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do for me to help me out? And whatever you do, you have to do it in a hurry because you don't have a lot of fee to do it either.
Right.
So you rely a lot on your experience then and I rely then a lot on all of the cabins that I've been able to research. So it's been fun to see what other people have built, what builders build alone without us architects involved.
Uh-huh.
So having knowledge of all of those helps when we get those challenging questions.
Do you usually strive for something unique each time you design a new cabin?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. A few clients will come to us and want, say, a repeat almost of things we've done before. But other people will come to us and say it's a blank slate, mm-hmm. excuse me, blank slate, and therefore we're looking for your imagination. So clients come with all kinds of different interpretations of what they're looking for.
If you've just joined us now, we're talking to Dale Mulfinger, an architect from the Sala architecture firm in the cities, and he's a cabinologist. We're talking about cabins, which we think of up here as North Country retreats. And maybe, can you describe for us some of your favorite little design innovations or cabin experience?
One of the cabin types that I have enjoyed immensely is what I call the porch cabin. Historically, it was a cabin that was about 80% porch with one warm room in the middle.
Hmm.
And we think it probably was an invention of an idea that was befitting a time when mom would take the brood of kids into the woods or near the lake for the whole of the summer to ward off those nasty diseases of polio and diphtheria.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, those porch parts started to get filled in. Originally, they would eat, sleep, do everything on the porch. We have had the opportunity to design some new screen porch cabins that have been a lot of fun to do. And I just finished one up in Fergus Falls area did one down around Stone Lake, Wisconsin. So that's been fun to pick up on.
How about glass in windows and whatever kind of glass?
Sure.
Ways to let in light is so much more prevalent now.
I've never had a client tell me I put too many windows in a house, but I have had a few clients that said I didn't quite put enough. We use a lot of glass. Unfortunately, we are living in an area where we're in the middle of window world, right? We have window companies all around us from War Road, Minnesota to Bayport to Pella, you know, down in Iowa and plenty of other companies out into Wisconsin, Ashland, Wisconsin, various places. So we love using all kinds of different windows, skylights, and so forth to make sure there's plenty of light brought in and plenty of opportunity to see the view. Just finishing up right about now a cabin down in the Kennedy Creek area along the shore, and it probably was one of the most spectacular sites for viewing that I've ever run across.
Mm.
And I had the feeling when I walked out on that piece of land, now, I could blow this. I mean, this is a project of considerable responsibility. I got to do this right. So I hope you get a chance to get down there and see it, because I think, according to my wife, who walked in it into that cabin for the first time a few hours ago, she said I caught the view pretty well.
What? So as you walk into the cabin, you immediately get the view out the window?
You immediately become speechless. It is a spectacular view. And I think one mistake a lot of people make is to assume that the view is vertical. And in Minnesota, in our area, the view is very much horizontal.
Right.
You know, we're rarely having more and more sky doesn't help us nearly as much as having more and more horizon. And I think what we were able to do in this cabin is really grab that horizon. And it's the horizon of Lake Superior or many of the lakes that we have that's so spectacular.
Yeah, that's a great observation, because you see a lot of these places with, you know, gable end with all
right.
the glass up, but you can't see much peripheral.
No, it's those are fine for seeing an eagle when they fly mm-hmm. by occasionally, but I think the real joy is to see the horizontal expanse of the views that we have.
You have written a book on the architecture of Edwin Lundy, and in fact are here in town to be a presenter at the 11th annual Lundy Vacation Home Tour in the West End tomorrow in Schroeder, for the Schroeder Historical Society. Can you give us a real thumbnail sketch of who was Edwin Lundy, and why do we give him so much special attention now?
Well, Edwin Lundy was an architect practicing in St. Paul from about 1922 to 1972. And he was known for doing fine homes for folks from St. Paul, predominantly. Two of his more public buildings he did were the Arboretum, the Minnesota University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum structure, and then he also did Lutzen Lodge, the beautiful old red lodge. He did several cabins along the North Shore on property that was always spectacular because, of course, these clients had access to property before everybody else. And he did those on either side of World War II, up well, in, you know, maybe into the 50s. And those cabins today are a core of structures that become part of the Lundy Tour. We've added to that a lot of other cabins that have been built because we can't go back to those few Lundy structures year after year. So there are quite a number of other fine cabins that other architects and homeowners have put together that we'll be looking at.
Is there something unique about a Lundy cabin?
Yes, there. Edwin Lundy, although he himself wasn't Scandinavian, he really employed Scandinavian techniques in the design of precious, quite small cabins that had a lot of built-in parts to them. And they were built in a particular way that, say, builders have been said they went together like a fine piece of furniture. Every stick was...
Was it like a timber frame?
They're very much timbered, yes. They're not true timber frames, if you were to talk to a timber framer, in the terms of true mortise and tendon and all of that. But they're predominantly timber-like, and at least the earliest ones. Some of the later ones were more standard frame construction.
And if folks are interested in learning more about this, I suppose they can join the tour tomorrow.
Excellent idea. I believe they can still sign up for the tour and show up at the Schroeder Historical Society tomorrow.
And I think there's a link to that stuff on the WTIP website, too, if you want to look it up.
And there'll be a talk tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and that the author Spike Carlson will be speaking about his book called Cabin Lessons. And Spike is an excellent presenter, and many of your readers might, or listeners rather, would probably look forward to hearing.
Well, I've looked at your, I Googled your name and found a lot of beautiful photographs of buildings that you've worked on. If other folks want to learn more about these, your designs, and maybe the Lundy cabins as well, where do they go?
They would go to our website, which is Sala Architects.
S-A-L-A.
S-A-L-A. And look us up, and they'll see the work of not just myself, but we have 12 other designers in the firm, and we all do individual work and have quite a breadth of ideas that we explore.
And similarly, they can learn about where to find your books by that same resource.
Correct.
End our little talk a little sooner than I would like to because I have so many other things I'd like to ask you about, but is there anything particularly that you want to be a takeaway of your talk here about cabins?
Well, the one thing I could encourage people is when they're thinking of building, build smaller than they imagine they might need to build and build better. Those are probably the best takeaways I can give is don't you really people are not going to spend time in those bedrooms. So, you know, make them small and make the whole place small. Get outside and enjoy the outdoor environment.
That sounds like a cabinologist's the best advice. Thank you very much, Dale, for joining us, and good luck with the Lundy tour tomorrow.
Great. It's been great to be here, and I'm a big promoter of public radio.
Thank you.